Hello, Nikki speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat, it's Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty Rice, how are you?
I'm good. Well, actually, no, I'm not all that good. I'm a bit Nespresso depresso, as my girls would say. They left last night. They've gone back to Australia, and the house is feeling very, very empty this morning.
I bet it is. I'm sorry to hear that. Nespresso depresso, though. Never heard that. Might have to add that to my
Hey, Nikki. Well, this week's podcast isn't really a new podcast, is it? It's part two of last week, which feels like a gazillion years ago now. What did we speak about last week?
Last week we spoke about moving season coming up, and we asked people to let us know if they were moving.
That's right. Did we tell them, Nikki, how to do that? No? Well, why don't I do that now? You can let us know if you're moving and how you're feeling about moving, or if your best buddy's moving, or if you wish you were moving, by pushing the microphone button on our website. So head over to twofatexpats.com and you'll see a little microphone on the right hand side. You can press it and leave us a message.
Okay, and then we also spoke about password apps, if you remember, computer protection, a little bit about our relationships with people in our expat lives, and then we talked a bit about teens and internet porn, and then we ran out of time.
Okay, so here we are, part two. Should we head back over there now, Nikki?
Let's go back. But don't forget, if you are moving, let us know, and let us know how you're feeling about it. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, let's go listen to part two.
Now, expat money, don't blow your dough. So first episode, got some really, really lovely positive responses to, and, you know, of course, once again, overshared and bared my soul on expat money. I guess I want to say thank you to everybody who said that they identified with it and are looking forward to episode two.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people, as you said, gave the feedback that they were comforted by the fact that it's not only them, so they're obviously associating with it. I know I saw that some people listened to it with their partners. They made comments about that. But what I want to know is, Kirsty, have you done your jobs?
I have done all my jobs. But I tell you what really amazed me, because the two jobs I had to go away with were to cancel a credit card that was attached to our offset loan for our mortgage, because we realized we didn't need it anymore. Well, we realized we didn't need it at all, and that it was just sitting there probably costing us money. And the other one was to, you know, set up our accounts for our automatic payments and to do that. But to get into the bank accounts, you know, just step one and actually pay something and do something. But, and I will talk about this more in Don't Blow Your Dough, but so I guess what surprised me the most was when I went to Australia and I went to go and do something with our bank accounts. I had always thought that part of my problem with banking was this whole Middle East thing, that, you know, my husband is the primary card holder, my husband is the king of the pack. Do you know that as a female, I maybe don't have the same rights in a banking way? You know, we've talked before about if anything was to happen to my husband while I was in the Middle East, our bank accounts would be shut down and I wouldn't have access to them, which is really scary stuff, right? So I guess, you know, you tend to put your home country up on a pedestal thinking, well, that wouldn't happen to me in Australia, and it wouldn't happen that drastically. But what would happen is you would go into the bank with your joint offset account for your mortgage and you would say, look, I don't want that credit card, and the bank will do everything to try and convince you that you do want the credit card. Trust me, they spend a good 5 to 10 minutes telling me why I needed to have it, but then told me, oh, actually, you can't cancel it because you're not the primary account holder, your husband is. And it was like, seriously? I'm standing here with the account details, my passport, it's a joint account, why does he get to do it? But he's the primary account holder, so he's actually had to do it. But that job has been done, and it was good to go in and have the conversation at the bank and kind of reclaim my rights and see it all there on the computer and then have the conversation with my husband about this is how it works and this is what we have to do and it's $55 a year for this, or we get these rewards for this. One of the interesting things, I'll save it. I've got some more interesting information for people in regards to credit cards and travel insurance and rewards for people who travel. So I will save that for the Don't Blow Your Dough. So Don't Blow Your Dough episode 2 will be out next week. So stay tuned for that one.
Perfect. Sounds good. Now, we also had a lovely voice message sent to us about Don't Blow Your Dough. So just let me play it for you.
Hi, ladies. Mariah Crowley. I have been listening to Don't Blow Your Dough. I think something that would be important to talk about, especially for younger people we expatriated when we were late 20s, early 30s, is savings and how to set a really big goal for yourself if that's why you're expatriating, because most likely you'll be making more money than you thought you would. And what do you want to end up with 10 years down the road? What are your financial goals? How can you get there? What should you cut back on? Anyways, just something great for new expats. Bye.
Oh, I love Mariah's comment. And I wish we would have done that, but we didn't at the start. But then I think it's very easy in hindsight, isn't it? Particularly before babies and all that sort of stuff and travel and whatever. But I can say what I am doing at the end, I guess, because we've been expats for 20 years, is we are setting a really sort of strict financial 5-year plan for what we want to do. I definitely have the goal of paying off our beach house.
Yep.
And I want that paid off. And I want to have a really set goal of about talking about that. In fact, the Don't Blow Your Dough website has a picture of our beach house on it, because that is what I am looking at and constantly thinking, this is the goal. Get that sucker paid for before you do anything. Because I guess for us financially, if we can pay off the beach house, get our kids through those final years of school, it really doesn't matter what we do next. Do you know, we've got money put away in shares, we've got money in savings, we're okay that we could say, okay, I'm going to go and sell cars and you can go and work at the milk bar and we'll be okay. Do you know, and that is true to me, financial freedom.
Freedom, yeah, that you can choose what to do. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's very much the aim. But I'm totally with you, Mariah. And I'll be talking about that in Don't Blow Your Dough and like putting down some things on the website about, you know, how you automate your salary so that those savings just automatically happen, that you set and forget and go, and that, you know, that's the whole thing. Because, I mean, I think that's all any of us want to have, isn't it? It's just a bit of financial freedom. And I don't mean we all have to be millionaires. I just mean you just want to feel like you've got a bit of control over it, that there isn't that fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. We will all look forward to the next episode of Don't Blow Your Dough.
Hey, Nikki, I want to go back to you though, because I remember you were saying, and if I'm asking the question, I'm sure someone else was listening and they've got the question too, is I know when we were talking about expat money and I was saying, you know, in the first episode, Greg and I had this whole conversation about control, and he didn't like the word because I said that he controlled the money, and he didn't like me using that term because he said it made him feel like he had taken the control from me. And you were saying you like the control, but for different reasons. And I didn't ask you at the time what those reasons were. What do you mean? What did you mean by that? Like, why do you like to be in charge of the finances?
For me, it's a purpose. So I talked at the time about not contributing, and you feel frustrated when you're not contributing, which I'm not doing significantly at the moment. So it's something you can do, so you can sort of manage it, so you can, and you can also see it, so you know what's there, and that you sort of contributing. It's more a contributor kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. And also I'm a lapsed A-type personality. So in my super high A personality days, I wouldn't consider letting anyone else look after the money.
I really, really like what you've just said about that feeling of, you know, maybe if you don't feel you're contributing. And see, this is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I really admire women who perhaps aren't earning money at the time. Do you know, they're focusing on looking after kids and house and all that sort of stuff. I love when I meet women like that who have no qualms about, you know, their worth. Do you know, like they'll say, no, this is my job and this job's very important and I am financially contributing because it would cost a fortune for, you know, my family to employ someone like me to do all the things that I do, right? So I love it when I meet women like that or men like that, like anyone that goes, no, I get it. This is the financial input that I'm giving because it would cost so much money to employ someone to do that. But I think the truth of the matter is most people get worn down by it, by society, you know, where they're constantly asked, so what do you do? And, you know, they're questioned by their value, you know, because if they're not earning money. So taking control of the finances would be a really clever thing to do because it would give you empowerment of feeling like, no, this is just another one of my roles and this is what I do and feeling really good about it. And I hadn't thought that in. But I also think that we need to get closer to both people looking after it and both people doing it together in some way. Maybe one person's not going to be the majority, or, you know, maybe one person's not going to be fully into it, but I think both of you have to have something in it. I think it's just dangerous when you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is an argument to say that I can have an account that I'm siphoning money off to and my husband would have no idea.
Yes.
Ha ha. Just kidding. But that could happen, and that happens when only one person has access to all the information. So it's very important, I agree, for both people to have access to all the information.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, I saw you in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group and you were doing location, 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 and we were up to E for Edmonton. Can you push play on E for Edmonton and I'll have a listen to who you interviewed, or do you want to tell me something about them first?
I'll just quickly tell you. So I spoke with Sadia, and Sadia is a Brit who's in Edmonton but via Qatar. Ooh. So that was quite a change of scenery and weather patterns. So she was in Qatar for 5 years and now she and her family have been in Edmonton for just over a year. She's a longtime podcast listener and it was very lovely to speak to her and ask her the fat five questions about her expat life. So I started, as always, by asking, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate your level of in love with Edmonton.
I'd say maybe a 6.
Okay, have you got any qualifying factors around the 6? Okay.
Well, it's been very cold and that's been an adjustment, like I said. We're struggling a little bit with finding halal food because we're Muslims, we have a Muslim background, and that is a little bit of an issue. So we're having to drive further afield to find meat and whatnot. So that's been a little unexpected. What else? I think though, if you ask me in a month or so, that will go up because spring is in the air. We'll be able to get out and about more and enjoy the weather. But yeah, I think at the minute I'm fed up of the cold and wish it was July already.
What's your best local find?
Food wise or?
Anything. Just anything that you found that you thought, oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Well, where we live, we're in the suburbs, but there is a lovely residence association and they have a beach house with a man-made lake. So that is great because it's great for winter and summer. So it's been great for the kids. It's very family orientated. Oh, another little find is a quaint little library, which is both English and French speaking. So I've had to brush up on my French as well a little bit. And that's been great. That's really close to our house and my daughter loves it. Yeah, that's a really quaint little thing that we found.
And the lake that you have at your residence association, in winter does it freeze so you can skate on it?
Yeah. Yes. So it's open both, it's open all year round. They've had skating, they've had ice hockey, they've had, what's it called? Fishing? Ice fishing. Yes. So that's been great. And they have loads of little events on all year round. So I think the Canadians love to celebrate every holiday. So there's something that seems to be on every month almost.
What drives you crazy?
Oh, you know, I would say perhaps having to drive everywhere and how long it takes to get to places. So the traffic so much isn't an issue, not like it was in Doha. And Edmonton isn't a huge city, but if you wanted to, it just, your amenities are a little bit further away than they would be in the UK, for instance. There's not many places you can walk to. You would have to take the car everywhere, and that I suppose drives me a little bit crazy.
What's one place you'd love to live?
Hawaii.
You didn't even think.
I didn't even think. No, it's relatively warm all year round. I never thought I'd say this, but I actually do miss the Doha temperatures when it's, you know, when it's so cold, December and January. I was thinking, did we make the right choice? Did we do the right thing by moving? Hawaii, you know, nice clean beaches, nice temperatures. What's not to like?
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or living this kind of life?
I think take advantage of where you are, explore where you are, do everything that location has to offer, which you may not get chance again. Do the touristy things actually, as because sometimes we get into this. When we live somewhere for a little while and it becomes home and or our home base, it you forget to do that. And sometimes it's good to just act as a tourist and take yourself out and have those day trips. Go to the mountains. We're very near Banff, which has been great. Just do those things and explore what the area has to offer. But I would say in terms of moving as well, to try and sell your furniture. Try and sell as much as you can. Don't bring it all with you. You can always buy again. Unless, obviously, you're attached to it and it has sentimental value, you really just get rid and start again.
Travel light.
Travel light, yeah. Take it as an opportunity to start afresh, and if you're moving into a new home, then start again. And it's a great excuse.
And what's the biggest lesson that you've learned?
I think it's important to integrate into the society in which you're living, and that's great. But I think you've got to stay true to yourself, your roots and your heritage, and be proud of that. There's nothing wrong with that. You've got to remember where you came from and pass that along to your children as well. You know, this life isn't always easy. We miss our friends, we miss our family dearly, especially when you have kids and you're away from them. You're always, well, I do. I debate whether or not it's the right thing to do all the time. But we also are stronger than we think we are. And we can deal with things that come up because we have to and we have no choice. I would say as well is when you do move, as my husband and I did, and it's so common that you just move by yourselves. So just as a couple or just as a family. And in those early days, it's really difficult to branch out and make friends, but it's really important that you do, and that you have friends that are of your own, that aren't just perhaps connected to your husband's work or your work. It's important that you try and establish your own circle of friends and support network as soon as possible when you get here. You rely on each other so much. It's just the way life is when you travel. But it's also good not to forget that, you know, you are your own person, and it's very important to retain that and to do things individually as well as together.
Oh, Nikki, she is so good.
Yeah, I thought she had some really good insights.
It was like she was in my head. She was so good. Everything from the practical to the philosophical, Yeah, I know. I used to work one day a week in Edmonton, so I know exactly where Sadaya is. And it is brutal in the winter. And she's at the end of a particularly long and cold winter. You know, all of my Albertan friends have spent the last 5 months posting pictures of lots of snow and ice. And it has been cold. And it really makes me think, because, you know, we're in April now. I can remember when I moved to Calgary in the March and I made a new friend and we went out for coffee at the end of April and it snowed and I said something about, oh, isn't this lovely? And she was like, are you serious? It's April, for God's sake. She said, it's been like this since October. And I was like, oh, wow. And it was suddenly like, oh, dear. Yeah, that's not good. But all of the stuff she was saying about, you know, the constantly asking yourself if you're doing the right thing and what you need to do and being true to yourself and not forgetting who you are and the practicality of the whole furniture thing, because she's bang on. I've just, you know, we bought all of this furniture when we were in Jakarta because it was back in the day of, you know, you wanted all this Indonesian furniture, and bit by bit at our beach house, we've sold piece by piece or put it out on the street because it doesn't fit or it doesn't work, and we probably didn't need to do all of that. And, you know, you don't need to hang on to all of that stuff. But the bit that I just loved was the advice about finding your own friends, not just friends of your partners and, you know, the mutual friends that you have. I don't know if you've seen it, Nikki. Are you a follower of Will Smith on social media?
Will Smith? I am not.
Yeah, the actor. Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it's almost like he has reinvented himself of late. So he does a lot of YouTube and of him kind of doing fun things, but there's always sort of this message of personal growth, do you know? And so there's anything that he's been particularly afraid of, he has encountered. And, you know, he's been up the Sydney Harbour Bridge, even though he's scared of heights. He's been, you know, he's done all of these things, but he does, you know, and he is particularly entertaining, as you can well imagine. But, you know, he always talks about him and Jada, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith, his wife. But he said how one of the biggest periods of their relationship growth was, and I'm trying desperately not to sound too much like Oprah, but he was saying the day where they both realized that they were not put on this earth to make each other happy. And I can't remember whether it was she looked at him or he looked at her, but one of them said, that's it, I'm done. I can't make you happy. That's not my job. You know, you make yourself happy, I make myself happy, but that is not a purpose as a couple. A couple does not get together to make each other happy. That is a complete misconception. You have to make your own self happy and then go on the journey together. And yes, you do support each other and you're there for each other, but give up on the idea that you will make your partner happy. And I just thought it was brilliant advice. She's kind of saying that too, like, don't get caught up in your togetherness and your expat relationships, you know, as one. You've got to go and do your own things and have your own relationships.
Couldn't agree more. I think that's very good. I shouldn't feel guilty for how many friends my husband has. Basically, that's what you're saying. I like it.
Why do you feel guilty that he has more or less?
Well, I always feel that he has less time to create friendships and I have more time to create friendships in a country at any given time. I guess the only place I didn't think that was in Hong Kong, when we were kind of equal. We were both working, both doing the same thing, whereas I think I've got more time in other countries where I haven't been working full time. So yeah, I don't know. I always feel sometimes, you know.
Yeah, a lot of men, though, and I'm sorry to generalize, but a lot of blokes just don't need a lot of friendships, do they?
Mm, that's very interesting. So I have a friend here, and her husband, when they were talking about moving, you know, her husband, they had a sort of deep and meaningful conversation before they moved. This was their first expat post as a family. And she's got four kids as well. And her husband said, well, you know, I only really need like four people, you know, my bestie, my mom, my dad, you know, whatever. And she's like, what do you mean four people? Like, I need 400 people. I need my this, my that, my this, you know, like all the different groups of people that you have.
Yeah.
She said, I don't know what you're talking about. You need four people. And it was just, and what you have just said then is reflective of that, is that most men don't have massive, large groups of friends. They sort of have a different, sort of a different social approach than females. I don't know if any trouble for
definitely
stupid anyway. Kirsty, we have spoken for a long time and we do need to whiz through the rest. But before we move on to books, movies, telly, podcasts and or food, I want to play this message from Nancy, who's one of our listeners, who has a question for you. And I think it's a question that might be shared by other people.
Hi, Nikki and Kirsty. It's Nancy Moore. And my expat adventure is over and I'm repatriated back to the United States, but I still love listening to your podcast and I've been listening to it since the very beginning. My question, and it's more, and Kirsty, this is more for you, is what has the Beagle been up to? I love the videos and the stories that you post about the Beagle. So that's my big question this week is, how is the Beagle? She just makes me giggle. And you guys do too. I hope you guys are having a great day. And just keep on doing what you're doing. You have no idea how much good you are spreading in the world of expats. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Nancy, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's so lovely. And I just giggled out loud when I was listening to that. Okay, firstly, how is the Beagle? The Beagle is still as naughty as ever. I did think she was slowing down. I came home this last week with the girls and for the first time ever said to Greg and the kids, I really think she's got really old and really slow. Like I had one of those mornings where we came down and said, where's the dog? And she was still asleep in her room where we put her at nighttime, even though the door was open, she hadn't bothered to come out. You know, like it was 10 o'clock and she was still sleeping, and that sort of old dog stuff where old dogs just get really, really tired and sleep and sleep and sleep. So I was having a little minor, you know, heart attack with my husband early this week when we had the pregnancy news from Helen and we're talking about our third child going off from school, and I keep looking at the Beagle going, oh my God, what are we going to do if something terrible happens to you and you just get old and die? Because she is within that span. I think Beagles have, they say, anywhere between 11 and 13 years, and she's 14. So, you know, she's old. So having told you all of that, Nancy, you will be very happy to know that last night when we finished dinner and we all carried our plates into the dishwasher, I heard one of the kids squeal and I came out and the Beagle was standing on top of the table eating out of the bowl of curried lentils that we have been having. So I am hoping she has a particularly sore bottom today from those curried lentils leaving her body because they were particularly spicy. But, yeah, she's still, I guess, she's still enough fight in the old girl that she's still up to no good. She has broken two oven doors while we've been here in the new house. She continues to climb up on everything and continues to have food issues. But she is slowing down. But, yeah, so that's what's happening with the Beagle, and we continue to adore her even though she's the naughtiest dog we've ever met. Anyway, Nikki, like you said, we've gone too long. I keep wondering, do we need to split this podcast up into two, or do we do a bonus on a particular subject? I'm not sure how this works because it's gone way too long.
Yes, you're never going to let it get through the editing.
No, I won't. I won't ever. Okay, so for me, very quickly, the book we're reading for book group is Little Fires Everywhere, and I can't talk about it yet because I haven't finished it and we've got book group tomorrow night, so I will talk about that more next week. On the plane, I watched The Greatest Showman, I, Tonya, and I finally got to finish Darkest Hour. Anyone who listened last week would know I watched it on the way over and I missed the last 20 minutes, so I was very happy to get the last 20 minutes on the way back. I thought Darkest Hour was fantastic. It's the one about Churchill and him coming into power as the Prime Minister. In the movie, it's played by Gary Oldman, which gets talked about a lot because there's been a lot of stuff about the makeup that they use for him and his Oscar nomination, etc. What I didn't know, Nikki Moffat, is that Ben Mendelsohn played the King.
Oh, I haven't seen it. So
yes, it is brilliant. And Ben Mendelsohn was absolutely brilliant as the King. So, I would highly recommend Darkest Hour as a really good – it's actually shot in a really interesting way too, that it will – you know, like when they're doing aerial shots of bombing, you know, they'll focus down on one little person on the ground and then back up into the sky, you know, from – that you see both views of of each, you know, person. And it was a story really well told about what Winston's personal life looked like with Clementine, the inner battles he had within, you know, because you quite often you just see Churchill, Roosevelt, you know, those leaders of wartime, but you don't look at what the inner battles were, that the grief he was getting of trying to hold his position as Prime Minister, and his relationship with the King, because the King really didn't think much of him at all, and that relationship then grew. So, yeah, it was a good one, a really good one to watch. I, Tonya, yep, I'm going to say the same as everyone else, the violence in it. Alison Janney is amazing, the woman who plays Tonya Harding's mother.
I love her as an actress.
Yeah, she's so good. And the one thing I haven't heard people talk about, though, with I, Tonya, that I found was the graphics of the computer graphics of putting her face on the body of the ice skater, because I'm pretty sure that isn't Margot Robbie doing all that skating. And to me, it looked really obvious. And I haven't heard anyone else say that, but to me, her face looked weird on the body. Like you could tell that it was graphically done, in my view. And maybe I'd love to hear if anyone else thought the same thing, but I would look at it and think, oh, that looks really weird. It looks like a head stuck on a body. Not, it doesn't all look like it all fits together. But also thought it was a great insight. But I would tell other people to watch the documentary that this movie is based on, where they interview these guys. And that is well worth seeing too if you want to have a good look at the real Tonya Harding.
Okay, so we should put the link up for that as well.
Yeah. And then The Greatest Showman. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but it's Hugh. I'm going to see it.
Yeah. Look, brilliant. A lot. I think I'm too old that I'm still remembering Moulin Rouge when I watch singing, dancing, performing, you know, that musical movies. Do you know, it felt very Moulin Rouge to me. But freaky how Hugh Jackman makes Zac Efron look so tiny. Is Hugh Jackman's huge, right? Pardon the pun, Hugh Jackman. But Greg and I were absolutely privileged that we got to see Hugh Jackman on Broadway in New York years ago, where he played Peter Allen and did the whole thing where he literally jumps off the piano and does the splits in the air and comes down. And I remember being really struck then by how enormous he is as a man, like his physical presence.
Yeah.
It's quite funny to see a man who's that big, as in strong and tall, sing and dance and, you know, tap and do things that we probably put with smaller people like Fred Astaire and, you know, those sorts of performers. But Zac Efron looks tiny standing next to Hugh Jackman.
Oh, that's very interesting. But you enjoyed it. Oh, the Moulin Rouge thing didn't put you off.
No, look, the music was beautiful. Michelle Williams plays Hugh Jackman's wife. She, of course, was married to Heath Ledger. There's a lot of Australian connections here today, isn't there?
But there is.
She can really sing. And, yeah, the music was just beautiful. The story is beautiful with the whole, you know, being seen as who you are and appreciated for who you are. Although I really do think they kind of skipped across the fact that P.T. Barnum really exploited these people, and they kind of addressed it but then didn't address it, But it's as a singing, dancing, you know, phenomenon, it was beautiful. My podcast recommendation for this week is to do The Guardian's audio long reads. If you are someone like me that is finding less and less time to read the long reads, you know, I used to read a lot of things on Medium and a lot of long reads. So I just don't, I don't know whether I've lost my concentration or I've lost my time, but I don't seem to. Whereas The Guardian does these audio long reads now where things that you probably would have read before online or in the paper, you can now listen to via audio.
Who reads them? Does the journalist that writes them read them, or do they have a professional
voice reader? I've done a couple and they've been different people. I don't know. I need to look at that. I'm not sure.
Okay. So is there a particular one that we'll put the link to, or is it a podcast app or something?
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Okay. Perfect. We'll pop that in.
Nikki, telly for you.
Telly for me. So Good Girls. Have you seen it?
No.
It's about two sisters, Beth and Annie, and their best friend Ruby. And they become the premise sounds really anyway, they become fed up by playing by the rules and not getting the respect they deserve. So they band together to take control of their lives, says the blurb, and they hold up a grocery store.
And so where is this set? Sort of what sort of time is it set?
In current US suburbia.
Ah.
So Beth is the perfect wife and mother, but her used car dealing, cheating husband has sent her family to financial ruin. So they've all got different ways that they need money. Ruby's happily married to a policeman. You can see where that's going to go wrong. But she has huge medical bills and needs experimental drugs to help her daughter. And Annie is a single mom who's caught up in a terrible custody battle with her ex. And so they plan this heist, but of course, you know, they're just suburban women. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they're not mastermind criminals. So it all goes a little bit wrong. Now, the main parts are played by, so Retta from Parks and Recreation is Ruby. Christina Hendricks from Mad Men is,
oh, I love her,
Beth. And Annie is played by Mae Whitman, who was the angsty teenager on Parenthood.
And she plays what, a mother or child?
She plays a single mother in the custody battle. Ah. So it's
great cast.
It's a great cast, and you know, and it's like a comedy slash drama. And it opens, you know, the first episode is, you know, the heist or whatever, robbing the grocery store where one of them works. And then you just think, oh, how can it, you know, like how can they get depth? How can it, you know, it's all going to go wrong, but like how long can that go for? But the way that it just goes deeper and deeper, and that it becomes more and more drama as less comedy, more drama, etc. But I'm actually
Where do I watch this? Is it a Netflix or an iTunes?
I'm watching it on Hulu, but it might also be on iTunes. I'll check on that as well.
Right. I wonder if it's even on telly in Australia or in the UK yet, or is it just one of those great new releases on US telly?
I'm not sure. I'll look into it and I'll add notes to the notes about that.
Yes.
So podcasts. So there's always a lot of lists for podcasts, you know, the best podcast to listen to, the top 50 podcasts for this, the top 50 podcasts for that. So there's a new, I've just seen it recently. It's called the Australian Audio Guide. And I know we talk a lot about Australian podcasts on here, but one of the favorite things about this Australian Audio Guide site is that there are three different pages on the site. So one is the podcast, so about each podcast and a blurb about it. And then the next sort of section of the website is about the makers. So it has blurbs separate from the podcast about the people that are behind the podcast. So the hosts, the editors, and the producers. So it's about the people that are involved. So I think it's just really sort of insightful. And the other thing is that it has another page that's articles that are mostly about sound and editing, which are two of my favorite podcast things. So I like to read those as well. So I just think it's a really great site. So it's got loads of podcast suggestions. It's got information about the people that are making them. And then it's got sort of industry stuff. So I quite like that. The other thing was often we get asked about podcasts for kids. So yes. Two that I've been listening to recently, Fierce Girls. Have you heard any of the Australian podcast series called Fierce Girls? No. So it's based a little bit on loosely, I imagine, Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, which is the other podcast I was about to say. So that Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls book is now a podcast, same idea. And the Fierce Girls is about Australians, adventurous girls, girls with guts and spirit, you know, fierce girls. And so they have stories about historical Australian female figures that you probably haven't heard of and some you have, and they're read by current Australian people who you would think who are interesting. So the one I recently listened to was about Fanny Durick and Mina Wiley. And have you heard of them? No, I hadn't either. they are the women that led the, I have now though, led the charge for women to compete in the swimming at the Olympic Games. So in the 1920s, they were the best women of their age in Australia at that time. And they led, you know, they were before Dawn Fraser was a rebel, these girls were right up there. And this podcast is narrated by Churia Pitt. So, Churia Pitt. So Churia Pitt, she was an ex-model, fitness junkie and a successful mining engineer. And she was doing a 100K ultra marathon through a deserty area in Australia. And there was a grass fire and she became trapped. And she was very badly injured. She had burns to 65% of her body. But she's gone on to be done a lot of work, humanitarian work about work in the area of burns. She does a lot of advocacy work as well. So she's quite well known in Australia. She lost 7 fingers and endured 6 months in hospital, had over 200 operations and 2 years in recovery. So she's just come through great hardship.
Front cover of Australian Women's Weekly was one of the last magazines that I saw her on the front cover of. And yeah, she, her and her partner, she's come through all of that and is just a great spokesperson for the endurance, which I just cannot imagine. Like, it was such a horrendous story at the time that these people had just got caught in a bushfire, basically, and hearing their story of trying to cower in a gully to get away from the fire and then burning, and then the amount of time it took for them to get out of there and treated, yeah, just horrendous, horrendous. Now, Nikki, you have sent me in amongst all of your podcast notes, because we have like a little running sheet that we use where we send each other stuff, and you've sent me a link to the Australian Podcast Awards, and it's got the finalists that were announced for the Podcast Awards. And now I should say, you and I didn't enter because we were too disorganized, very, very disorganized. So, but we will enter next year for sure. And next year we're going to bug the hell out of everyone asking them to please vote for us. But I'm just having a look. Nikki, have you had a look at who the finalists are?
I have.
And are there some omissions that have amazed you on this list?
There are some omissions, but I just wonder whether they weren't, because there were particular rules for things. So you had to have had X number of episodes released. You know, there were some sort of guidelines about it. What are the omissions that are surprising you?
Well, I can't see Chats 10 Looks 3 here. And I would have thought that they would have had one of the biggest listenerships of podcasts in Australia, and this is the Australian Podcast Awards. Or have I just missed where they're listed?
I actually think they were listed under. No, it's not. It's true. You're right. Chat 10 Looks 3 is not there.
Ah, which really surprises me. So, you know, some of my, and the other thing is, there's a few on here. They're quite old. Like, we've talked about Not By Accident before, loved it, which is, of course, was the podcast about the woman who was doing IVF in another country. And that's been listed as a finalist, which is great. And Trace has been listed as a finalist. There's a few here that I've never heard of that I definitely want to go and see because the names of them are hysterical. Like storytelling, let's talk about sex, but it's S-E-C-T-S. Am I ready to be a father? That could be quite interesting. I've got some branded podcasts, which I guess are more business podcasts.
Well, I had a look at a couple of those. So Hello Bump was done by Mamma Mia and it was about being pregnant. And the thing about cancer is sponsored by the, I don't know whether it's Australia, New South Wales Cancer Foundation or the Australian Cancer Foundation. But, yeah, so I had a little look into those. So, and I hadn't listened to Hello Bump because I'm really not having a baby anymore.
No.
But I was interested to having a listen to some of those to see whether.
It feels like.
How branded they were.
It feels like there's quite a few Mamma Mia podcasts in here. So Popular Vote, No Filter, which of course is Mia Friedman, and Mamma Mia Out Loud, which is Mia Friedman, and Tell Me It's Gonna Be Okay, which is Mia Friedman. They're all in the Popular Vote.
So this is very interesting. So I don't know whether you do know because you've lived in America, but every year they have this time of year they have a national basketball competition in college basketball.
Yeah.
And they do and everybody bets on it, like footy tips. Like everybody has their bracket that they call they call them brackets and they go down. So there was a podcasting group in the States that did the same thing. And they said, okay, we're going to have a podcast bracket. And they put up all these podcasts against each other and they had all these different sections and they put them up against each other. And people had to vote every week. But the point of it was, so one of the podcasts was S-Town.
Right.
One of them was This American Life. One of them, you know, all these different podcasts in various categories. And I think they started with 64 and, you know, ended up with one. But the podcast that won it is not the most popular podcast, is not sort of the biggest most downloaded podcast in America, but is a podcast which has some very diehard fans and groupies. And so every week they wrote, this guy running the competition wrote an article every week. He says, well, it looks like they've got an up and comer who keeps sort of coming through the things. And then he called them something else like a spring surprise or something. Anyway, in the end he said, well, I can't do anything about it. And the last week, and it was funny because it's a podcast that I listen to. And every week they'd say, we're still in it, people. So if, you know, we're in it, so please vote for us. You know, we love our listeners. They also have a very active Facebook group. So I think it's just about, and I listen to Tell Me It's Going to Be Okay, which is one of the Popular Vote things. And every week they ask you, please vote for us. You know, go to this website and vote for us. And so I think in the last week in these American Podcast Awards, they're up against This American Life. They said the greatest podcast of all time versus us. Yeah. But, you know, do the greatest podcasts of all time have the number of engaged listeners that we have?
Yeah.
You know, because there's certainly This American Life is not adding a little thing at the end saying, hey, we're nominated for this award. Can you vote for us?
Yeah.
Because there was no, you know, so they didn't put any advertising in. Whereas this podcast, the little I Think I Can podcast, which, you know, it has quite a broad listenership, but nowhere near This American Life, which they totally acknowledged. And they said, look, you know, we don't have the production, we don't have the stories, we don't have we don't have Ira Glass,
yeah.
But we have our Facebook group and we have our listeners, and they ended up winning.
Which goes to show, right, because Conversations with Richard Feidler would have to be the most popular podcast if you looked in the top 10 of podcasts. Also, you know, I keep thinking about the newies like the Pineapple Project and all of these other podcasts that have been in the top 10. There is no sign of them. But my favourite podcast is Don't Shoot the Messenger. And I know they did put their names in, but they're not here. So they obviously didn't ask enough either. But Nikki, next year we are entering.
We're in and we're going to be asking you. So get ready. Buckle up. So it's so funny. I just, we'll follow up. Since we're going to definitely split this podcast into two, I'm going to do a follow-up story. On a previous podcast, I was talking to you about Armchair Expert with Dax Shepherd.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned that there was somebody who speaks all the time and talks to. And I have listened to a few more episodes lately, and I have to say the person he's talking to is called Monica, and that's his producer. And they actually do quite a brilliant thing. Once you get past the 2-hour thing and get your head around it, it's totally fine. So the interviews never go for 2 hours. The interviews go for sort of 1.5 hours. And then she comes on and she's spent some time since the interview has been recorded and she goes over all the things they said. So he might have said, oh, in 1993, I did this. And she'll come in like a fact check and say, actually, that was not 1993. That was 1996. You know, you did that. And in some cases, like she'll call his mum and say, oh, I checked with your mum about this. But then there are other things he'll talk about or the guest will talk about, and that she'll fact check that to say, you know, you mentioned this and in fact that's right, but then there's this extra piece of information that would probably be valuable if the listener is listening to it as a whole. And I just actually think it just really works really well, and I think it's very clever because you don't have to go back the next week and say, oh, actually last week I said this.
Yes, yes, like our friends that Don't Shoot the Messenger have to say at the beginning of episode, our apologies this week.
So that's one, answering the question, who is the person he talks to all the time? And also just giving a kind of a cool little tidbit about the way that show works. And I think that's why, you know, lots of celebrities have their own interview shows, but I think that bit of that show actually makes it unique and actually a really good listen.
I just can't be doing with 2 hours worth of podcast.
I know, but it's about splitting it up. I can't be doing 2 hours worth of podcasts either. And it took me so long to go back and listen to the other half, the Kristen Bell one. But I had to go shopping the other day for my daughter's grown out of all her clothes. So I had to go and buy her loads of t-shirts and jeans and things. And so I was just walking around aimlessly and I just had it in my head and it worked out for me. One last thing that I've got.
Take your time. We're going to split this in two now, so it doesn't matter.
That I wanted to quickly mention, and you talked about Will Smith, is Sarah Ferguson. Sarah Fergie. Do you follow her on Instagram?
I love her, but I don't follow her on Insta. But now I didn't even know she was on Insta. God, the people I don't think about who will be on Insta. Tell me.
She has gold. It's such a mum account. Like, you know, she's very proud of her girls, Beatrice and Eugenie. And you can tell she totally does it with no help. She doesn't have a social media manager. Like, she puts photos, like just quotes over the top of photos. And I think one of the kids' engagement photos, I think it was recently Eugenie that just got engaged, was it?
I didn't know that.
And she put, you know, I'm so proud. And the photo was a bit blurry and she just wrote over the top of it, like added text. And, you know, and she puts quotes. So obviously she copies and pastes a quote from somewhere else and puts it on there, but you can't read the sides because the sides are just too big, you know, when the writing's too big. And she also posts a lot of photos of her, not selfies, but photos other people have taken. And they're not the best photo of her. Like, you can tell that she's really genuinely wants to show the situation that she's in, and usually it's with another person, etc. And you know, the young royals, they're all over social media these days, and it's in a very professional and slick way, which is great. I think that's good, and it's good for family, and you know, there's the new baby and the wedding and everything coming up, and that's great for them. But I just really think this is a really refreshing change, you know, to see someone who is very high profile, who obviously does not have anyone managing this process for her, and she's just doing herself.
And that's what we want.
And, real.
Yes.
So that was my last tip. So it's been a while since we've discussed an Instagram account, but I just thought I'd throw that in there. Fergie.
Yeah. I need to go back to that, actually, because I really have moved to Instagram from Facebook. I spend a lot more time looking at Instagram Live than I do scrolling through Facebook. I know it's a common thing. Everybody feels the same way, that we've lost so much news from our feeds and it's all just stupid sponsored posts and, you know, people asking us to say our favourite movie quote or what we ate for breakfast or to type in whatever. I do not know why I keep getting those things because I don't encourage that behaviour at all. But, I love Instagram I love Instagram stories. I wish I got my act together to do more myself.
Well, you know, you can now. We'll watch out for them.
Yes. Right. Oh, yeah, I should say that on Instagram, because we have a Two Fat Expats Instagram account, Nikki, which you tend to look after, and because I'm hopeless. And I have Instagram at
Schmozzle. And is yours Nikki Moff? What's your Instagram then?
That is. My Instagram is Nikki Moff. Yes. Double K, double F. So many doubles.
All right. Are we all done?
We're all done. And we're going to work out in the editing suite how to split this into two. And we might have to do a separate little intro over the top of the second, but it's going to be great.
That's a great idea. But yeah, definitely. We'll break it up into two. Maybe even we just have part one, part two. We release part one day and part two a couple of days later.
Perfect. Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
Okay. All right. I will see you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.